Thanks be to God. I remember when I was a teenager, it was a game we used to love to play. And it didn't have a name, but what we did was you try to trick somebody into making a fool of themselves by asking them loaded questions. And so no matter how they answered, it would be wrong and everybody could laugh at them. And we used to have the best time at all playing that game, and I know people still play it, but when I was in junior high school and high school, that was our biggest pastime, was trying to catch somebody out by asking them questions that no matter how you answered, it was wrong. And all through the Gospels, the Jewish leaders keep on trying to catch Jesus out like that. You know, over and over they're asking these questions that there seems to be no answer to it. And he always shuts them up. I mean, he had some Philadelphia lawyer in him, I guess. But he always could answer their question in a way that they couldn't come back at him. And so they tried this question now on him, the thing, you know, we know it about the renter under Caesar's. It's worded a little bit different in the New Revised Version. But they said, well, you know, if you don't respect any person, if God is the only person in control, the only one that we need to be loyal to, then do we pay taxes to the emperor, or what do we do? And I can see them all, just like we were in school, sitting there kind of laughing, waiting, you know, because we know the answer is going to get him in trouble. Because if he answers no, you don't owe Caesar anything, you owe everything to God. Well then, okay, they got him there, because that means he's a revolutionary. And they can call the Romans, they can come hang him, and it's over and done with. Okay, if he answers, yes, of course you got to pay your taxes and you got to do all that, then, okay, he's just another politician like the rest of them, and the people are not going to believe in him like they were. So they just knew they had him here, and I'm sure they were all laughing and happy to themselves and looking and winking at each other. But Jesus, he gets them again. He says, show me a coin. So they pull out a penny or a denarius, it says. And of course, the coins are always just like we have them now. They always got somebody's name and face stamped on it. Well, this coin had whoever was the Caesar at the time stamped on it. And Jesus said, okay, whose image and name is on it? And they said, well, Caesar's. He said, okay, well then give to Caesar what's his and give to God what's his. And they couldn't answer him. And I love these times that Jesus talks, and you have to read between the lines kind of. But what's important in this is not about the money and what's Caesar's. You know, the Caesars in the world are going to get theirs, and there's nothing we can do about it. But what's important is what is God's. You know, he doesn't elaborate here, but what is God's? If the coin has the image of Caesar, and that's Caesar's, all right, what has God's image? That's us, is it not? So we're God's. So what Jesus is saying is we give ourselves to God. And, you know, that's the important part of this, okay? And then the question comes up, how do we do that? Do we go jump off a bridge so we can go straight to God? Or hopefully, or what do we do? And I thought it was interesting when Amy was giving the church prayer that she said, what do we do, God? And that's a good question. It's, what do we do? Well, a clue, I think, is found in all of the parables that Jesus spoke. And a lot of these parables are kind of hard to understand, but they're fascinating. And the more you read them, the more you see meanings here and there that maybe you didn't see before. I spent a lot of time reading them because they are so puzzling. And I don't know why Christ chose to talk. Sometimes it seems like in riddles, instead of just coming out and saying it. But I think maybe he wanted people to, he wanted those to understand his message who would think about the words instead of having everything spelled out for them. He wanted people who had some insight and would try to figure out what the meaning was. I think that's who Christ tried to appeal to. And so these parables have a lot of clues as to what do we do. How do we give ourselves to God? And you know, we have a purpose. God created us. He gave us a life. And he gave us Christ. He gave us salvation. You know, so these things he gave us. And we owe him something back. We have a purpose. And I'm going to wander a little bit because there's a story that I heard in a sermon given at the last time I was at a Lake Speaker training class. And I thought it was one of the best sermons. It was two good sermons given that day, but both of them were good. This one, the story that was told, I thought it had a good bearing on what I'm trying to say. So I'm going to wander off and tell a story for a minute. And I've heard this story before. I heard it in a sermon. I've seen it on the internet. I don't know if it's true. It's probably a lie. But I never let facts interrupt me when I'm talking. So I'm going to tell it anyway because it's a good story. And the story is that, you know, Ford Motor Company in 1964 came out with the Mustang, which was probably the best-selling car there ever been. And it was a big hit for them. And they, when they first designed it and were ready to bring it out, they knew it was going to be a hit because everybody that looked at it loved it. And so somebody had the idea, according to this story, to save the first carburetor that was manufactured and destined for a Mustang. And they put it in a glass case and they set it in the CEO or the president's office and it sat there. And of course, you know, Ford made the Mustang for years and years, still making them. And the story is that thing just sat down, nobody paying attention to it. You know, it was, the carburetor was built to go on a motor. But it just sat down on the shelf. And as the story goes on, a new president or whatever took over and came into the offices and just happened to see that and said, "What's that?" And somebody told him, "Oh, that's the first Mustang carburetor that was ever manufactured and it was put there for display." And he said, "Well, what's the point of that?" He said, "The carburetor was made to go on a car. And that's what its purpose is, to do what it was made for." And he said, "You know, take it out there and put it in the assembly line, put it on a motor and let it go." So they did. And that carburetor went on a car, new car, went out. And it went through the lifetime of that car. And it got a little dirty by now and a little bit beat up and greasy. And it went in a junkyard, and then somebody got it, put it on another car, and it ran through the life of that car. And then finally, like 30 years later, this little carburetor wound up in the scrap heap, and it was dirty, and it was worn out and broken, but it had done what it was made to do. And of course, the moral of that story is that we're here for a purpose, and we're supposed to do that. Well, now I'm going to finally get back to the gospel lesson, and it talks about the servants of the harsh master who he went off and he gave them some money to look after for him. Well, the first two, he gave them 5 and then 2 talents, I believe. And so they said, "Well, we got to do something with this, you know. He gave it to us to look after, and we got to do something." So they invested it, loaned it out, whatever they did, and they made some money. Well, the third one, he didn't get that much. He only got 1 talent, but he was afraid. He was so afraid to fail his master that he just buried it in the ground. And one of the versions says he wrapped it up in a handkerchief and hid it somewhere. But anyway, he just buried it and held on to it. And when the master came back, he asked the first one, said, "Well, where's the money I gave you?" And the servant says, "Well, here it is, and I doubled it for you." And he said, "Well done, good and faithful servant." And it's interesting that all our good sayings come out of the Bible. You know, that's one we hear a lot. And next servant says the same thing. He had doubled his money. And he says, well done. You know, I'm gonna, since you've done so good, I'm going to give you more authority. And he came to the last one. He said, where's the money I gave you? And the servant says, well, master, he said, I know you're a hard man. And I was afraid something would happen. So I buried it, and now I dug it up, and here it is. And he just figured the master would be happy with him, but he was not. The master said, you lazy bum, more or less. He said, you didn't do anything with what I gave you. He said, so you can just go back to slopping the hogs or whatever you was doing to start with, because I'm going to take that away from you. And it says he'll banish him, you know, to where there's wailing and gnashing of teeth, but you know, I think he probably just sent him back to feeding the hogs. But he said, you can't have any responsibility. You didn't do anything with what I gave you. Well, I think the point of this story is, what are we going to do with what God gave us? You know, we're supposed to turn out something for God. You know, he's not, I don't believe that God is a greedy, hateful master like the master in this story, but he is a strict master, and I believe that he's going to account for us strictly. And one thing that I think we have to bear in mind is, and we have to be like these first two servants and have a little courage. And you know, courage sometimes is being more afraid to do nothing than afraid to fail. You know, the third servant was afraid to fail, so he didn't do anything. And his master was mad. And I think that the way we can probably make God unhappy with us is to do nothing. And you know, I think about an example comes to mind. It's always seemed like if something happens that goes with a Sunday school lesson or a sermon or something that makes it fit. You know, this week I believe it was the mayor of Newark, New Jersey, and I looked his name up this morning and forgot it again. He went in the building and saved this woman and dragged her out. It was on fire. And his security man or his aide or something said, he tried to stop him from going in and said, you can't go in there. It's too dangerous. He said, wait for the fireman. And he said, the mayor said, we can't stand here and do nothing. We've got to do something. And so he ran in, and fortunately he got the woman out. This man probably, if he doesn't get in a big scandal, he'll be mayor for the rest of his life. He's the mayor that when this was the winter before this passed, because we didn't have a winter this year, did we? There was a severe winter in the Northeast, and this mayor went out and made sure that they plowed the streets and got people. He was out there working with them all night for about two or three nights, making sure that they got the streets open, got people's driveways clear. So obviously, this is a man who has some courage. He is more afraid to do nothing than he is to fail. And, you know, I think that's what makes a person brave. You know, it's not that you're not afraid. You know, we're always afraid of things that are different, things that we don't know how it's going to turn out. But courage is, and faith, I should say faith more than courage, is being more afraid to do nothing than afraid to try and fail. And these two servants who the master rewarded were more afraid to do nothing than they were to fail. They were willing to take a risk to try to produce something for their master. You know, the third one was not, and he was punished. And it says in there that those who do nothing will have everything taken away. I believe that God is going to strictly account us on what we have done with what he gave us. You know, and what he gave us is us, and he gave us salvation. And what we're supposed to do If we're Christians, if we're going to call ourselves that, we're ambassadors to the rest of the world. You remember back in the Old Testament, God told Abram, he said that you're going to be the one to bring your ancestors, your descendants are going to bring salvation to all of mankind. Well, we're those descendants, and it's our job. And I think, and it scares me when I think about that God's going to judge us on what we have done for Him. I'm scared to death of that, because I know that I haven't done that much. You know, and I hope all of us, when you look inside yourself, that when it gets time, that you're going to face God and account for what you did. That you did like the little carburetor. You might be worn out, you might be broken, you might be a little dirty. But when you come up there, you say, I did what I was supposed to do, God. You know, I served my purpose. And our purpose, like I said, is ambassadors. You know, we can't all go out and preach on the street. But the way we treat other people, the way we show ourselves to other people. I know several years ago in Bible school, the theme was about lighthouses. It was something about lighthouses. And I helped teach that year, and they gave everybody a lanyard thing like you carry a name badge on. And it says, Shining God's Light. And I needed one at the time for work, and so I had that one, and I'm still using that very same one. It's kind of faded now. But people sometimes see it, and you know, you see something, you see people wearing something, you see something written on it, you want to read it. And so people want to read it. And it says, Shining God's Light. And sometimes I'll happen to notice, and it makes me think, okay, if I'm shining God's light, I don't want everybody I meet and talk to see that I'm not a good light shining for God. So, you know, it kind of helps remind me how I'm supposed to behave. But that's what God wants us to do. It's not just bring the light that He gave us back to Him and hand it back. Here it is, God. I didn't use it much, but here it is. But to come back on that day of reckoning and be worn out and be a little broken, but you've served. And like the servant who increased the amount of money that the master gave them, if we are good ambassadors, if we care for those who are in need and don't judge others, if we show the world that God gave us a purpose and we know what that purpose is and we aim to achieve that purpose, then others may be drawn to that. Others will see that this is a real thing. And this is our purpose, I believe. And, you know, God, I think when He accounts for us, you know, I don't think He's a severe master, but I think He'll be a strict master. I think He's kept score on us, and that's how we'll be graded, I think, on what did we do with what He gave us. And our hymn of commitment, if y'all are ready for that, is on 557 in the Methodist hymnal. Blessed be the tide.